Good evening. It is still January the 10th. Thursday, January the 10th, 2019. It's almost 10:30 in the evening here in the lovely city of Seattle in Little Saigon. And this is your good friend Dan to do another podcast. I already did a long-winded one today. I don't know if I'm really proud of that one, but hopefully this one will be, if not better, a bit more philosophical. I don't know. I had a goal of doing a funny podcast today on the Yamaha, and I still think that may end up happening. Probably not today, though, but maybe tomorrow or Saturday. But yeah, I guess, you know, I try to mix it up, and sometimes I'm just on a serious bent. Anyways, I have a few topics I want to discuss, really just about three. And the first subject I want to discuss, because it's related to a famous poem, that, you know, everyone beats you over the head with, but it's kind of an important poem to me because, you know, I'm an anarchist. And as I've come to realize what I am philosophically and what I've been since I was a kid, you know, I think human beings have an essential right to be free. I think the most sound moral principle you can follow in this life is try to treat your neighbors and your friends with respect, and live and let live, and don't be a bully. Be willing to defend yourself and your property if need be, but try to live in a decent society. And if you have to, if you have a problem that requires two or more people, organize voluntarily. Don't be a ruler. Don't be a king. Don't be a tyrant. Be a leader. If you feel like something needs a leader, guess what? Actual leaders do not lead with a whip. That's called a ruler. That's called a martinet. That's called a tyrant. Actual leaders don't need laws or government to lead. If they're actually good at what they do, people will simply follow. And usually because the leader, amongst other things, has a good idea. So there's nothing wrong with leadership. It isn't a violation of anarchism at all. But if you have to lead somebody by beating them over the head, then yeah, you're probably a scumbag, and the people should probably get away from you as soon as possible. So I'm mentioning this again because I you know, there's this famous quotation from Martin Niemöller. It's a famous quotation about the Holocaust, essentially about Nazi Germany. And I'm going to read the poem slash quotation, and I'm going to talk about it. "First they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me." Now, here's the thing. I used to love this quote slash poem. I still kind of do, although I feel like it's a bit of a... I think it's got some flaws. It might not be on purpose, but it's entirely plausible that it is on purpose. But before we talk about the specific quote I just read, the specific poem that many of you are aware of, I would like to talk about something called the First International. It happened, I believe, in 1905. It happened in the midst of technically the Russian Revolution of 1905. A lot of people don't realize this, but in the aftermath of the Russo-Japanese War, where the Russians were defeated by the Japanese, there was a lot of instability in Russia, and there was actually a revolution, and, you know, the Tsar came very, very close in 1905 to losing power. But one of the things that happened, and it may not have been 1905, it could have been at the end of the 19th century, but one of the things happened at this international, the 1905, I believe, is that there was a great split between the Marxists. And what I should really say is that there was a big split between the radicals, okay? Some of the radicals were Marxists. Not all Russians or radicals involved were actually Marxists or communists. And it split into two groups, the majority and the minority. The majority group, the Bolsheviks, and that's what Bolshevik means, the majority. They were led by the likes of people like Lenin and others. And they were the hardcore communists. And in terms of this particular meeting, they were the majority. The minority, the Mensheviks, were people like the other radicals. And frankly, a lot of the Mensheviks were anarchists. I don't need to explain too much to you what happens next, but in the history to follow for Russia, which includes World War I and ultimately the fall of the Tsar, when the Bolsheviks finally took control in October and November of 1917, basically one of the first groups of people that the Bolsheviks, that the communists got rid of, were the anarchists. I hate to break it to you, but everybody hates anarchists. And this kind of reminds me of that famous statement, I think, from Voltaire. And I'm going to paraphrase in a sense. It's something like, find out which group you are not allowed to criticize. And that is the group that is in power. Now, that's a paraphrase, but essentially, if there's a group you can't criticize, they likely rule you. But there's also another angle on this. Find out about the group that everybody hates, that everybody despises, that everybody seeks to destroy. And it's a bit more complicated because, you know, evil people are often the enemies of everybody, you'd hope. But find out about that group that everybody despises. And in my opinion, if you investigate this carefully enough, it's as likely as not that that is the group that is closest to the truth. And I got to tell you, throughout modern history, there is no group that is hated more, misunderstood more, labeled more, lambasted more than anarchists. It's so bad in America today that I'll have family members and friends talk to me about Antifa, excuse me, and say, look at Antifa, that's your anarchism. And I have to basically shake my head and drive a spike through my skull and tell them that Antifa has nothing to do with anarchism. Antifa is essentially the opposite. The thing that they're battling for in the streets is so that somebody, the government, can get more power to implement an agenda at the point of a gun. There is nothing anarchist about that. There is nothing non-aggression principle about that. And yet, in America today, if there's a bunch of Antifa someplace tipping over garbage cans and setting shit on fire, boy, do you get a lot of people talking about anarchy. They say it's anarchy. It's chaos. It's anarchy. Anarchy doesn't mean that, okay? Anarchy means the absence of government, okay? It does not mean the absence of common sense. It does not mean the absence of comedy, of friendship. It does not mean the absence of people willing to communicate. All it means is that you're choosing not to have a ruler. You're choosing not to be told how to live your life at the point of a gun. That is all that it actually means. It also means that if you're one of these freaks, you know, who believes in the Venus Project because they saw the movie Zeitgeist, but claims you're an anarchist, or if you're one of these freaks who is a communist but claims they're an anarchist, no. Okay? If you have to implement your policy at the point of a gun, you are not an anarchist. I'm sorry. There's some other name for you. I think it's called statist. But the point is, you're not an anarchist. Please pick the right term. Okay? But what I find interesting, and it takes a lot of digging, is that if you want to find out how many anarchists the Nazis killed, and this is kind of what I'm getting to here, like, the Nazis killed more than just Jews. They killed a lot of Jews, but they actually killed millions of other people. But you have to dig really, really deep. You have to get past the gypsies and the homosexuals before you ever get to a reference of the anarchists that the Nazis killed. Ever. You know, if a society, if a whole society hates something, this doesn't imply it's a good thing. You know, that's not a good, sound, logical argument. But I do find it deeply suspect that in much of the 20th century and 21st century political history and discourse, that anarchists are incredibly misunderstood. And when it comes to killing anarchists, if the government kills anarchists, nobody gives a fuck. Like, of all the people it's okay for you to kill, well, shit, make sure you don't kill the gypsies and the Jews or the communists or the trade unionists. Don't kill the socialists. But if there's an anarchist, chuck him on a barge and set it on fire. And yeah, I suppose it sounds like I have a bit of bitterness about this, but it's because I didn't really recognize my own personal truth on this issue until just a couple years ago. A couple years ago, back in 2016, really right up until almost the election, I would have called myself a libertarian. And you know, it wasn't just Gary Johnson and the fucking bake the cake bullshit. I mean, that was total bullshit. Here's the deal. If you own a bakery and you don't want to create a wedding cake for a gay couple, I don't know if that's sound business practice, but that's your own fucking business. That's your private business. It is literally your own fucking business. And guess what? If enough people get pissed off about that, you're going to be out of business. You don't need the government to do one fucking thing. Mostly, you need the government to get the fuck out of the way. So yeah, up until the election of 2016, I would have called myself a libertarian. I would have said, you know, yes, we need a government, you know, we need it to do some things, but it's a very, very finite set of things, right? I've just come to the realization that the more you peel away at the things you think the government must do, the more you realize that there's nothing you'd want the government to ever fucking do. Ever. The government is terrible at assigning blame. So why the fuck would we want them to run systems of justice in our country? Our government is terrible at picking good guys from bad guys. We kill lots of fucking innocent people. We have killed lots of innocent people during the war on terror. The government is not good at picking evil people and only killing them. And even if it were, I don't think I would want that kind of fucking shit. But it turns out they really suck. So yeah, up until then I was a libertarian. And then I realized ultimately that there was nothing at all that I wanted from the government except to be left alone. I really do desire to live within a community where people communicate and work together and solve problems. I would love it if people could wake up to their ability, their capacity to deal with things like homelessness, like the garbage in the streets, like things that they could take charge of one step at a time. But most Americans have been subdued, controlled, sucked into this idea that nothing can get done without mommy and daddy government. So yeah, this Niemöller quote is wonderful. You know, first they came for these people, then they came for those people. But nowhere in this fucking quote does it mention the most hated group by both communists and Nazis, and that's anarchists. And it's not accidental. Nazis and communists, A, were not that different, really, in terms of what their goals were. And in terms of outcomes, they were virtually the same. They were hyper-status. They wanted the most powerful, the most intrusive, the most abusive government possible. Stalin and Hitler were fellow travelers. The only reason why, if they ever did really hate each other, it was simply because they hated the competition. That's it. Anyways, I know that's a big rant on this, but I really think there's something to this. You know, if it's true that one way to identify the ruling class is to figure out who you can't criticize, I also think it may also be true that if you really want to find the truth, find out about the ideas that you're not allowed to express. Find out about the statements that are not allowed to be discussed. Find out about the concepts that no one can write down. And that'll tell you a lot about what might actually be true. In America today, if you write a book, because I'm a writer, if you write a book that tells everybody that everything's okay and that, you know, voting is awesome and that Republicans and Democrats or just, you know, whatever you might be, that's fine. And the government's here to help you. If you write a book that reinforces the corporate kind of fascist agenda, then yeah, you're going to get published, man. Especially if you add in some, you know, sex and maybe some futuristic technology that pulls people away from the bleakness of their reality. But if you actually write a book in this country about what's really going on, and this is the kind of writer I am. When I wrote Retirement, I didn't write it as a way to make people feel better about working in this in software engineering, or frankly, even working in modern America and contemporary America. My intention wasn't to say, oh, here's a book where you're going to feel really comfortable about your fucking job. No, I wrote a book from the heart. And that doesn't mean it's true for you, but it was true for me. It's fiction, but ultimately, it very much came from my own experiences. Those types of stories do not get supported. Those stories don't get sold. And arguably, those aren't the stories that the average American wants to read. I mean, it is, in a sense, a futile exercise on that level. You are more likely to be read if you write something that reinforces a person's comfortable beliefs. If you write something that reinforces the comfortable belief system, that is the book people are going to read. If you write something that calls into question your society, number one, you very well could get censored in multiple ways. And number two, the ultimate censorship is really the people that have been so programmed that they just don't recognize the truth when they see it. So yeah, I'm an anarchist. I'm unashamed. I'm not perfect. I'm also a Christian. I follow the non-aggression principle, though frankly, in the last 2 years, I've had at least one incident where I think I fucked that one up a bit. Not in terms of physical violence or property damage, but in terms of human relationships. And I've talked about that before. But I'm also hated because people don't understand what anarchism is. And really, every time you watch a movie or a TV show, if some crazy shit's going on and crap is catching fire, you will always hear the statement, well, this is anarchy. Or they'll say things like, well, what do you want, anarchy? Anarchy has become a loaded term. It no longer means, in the popular consciousness, what it actually means, okay? Anarchy does not mean chaos in logical, semantic terms. But in terms of how it's used in America, it means chaos. If you're an anarchist, you believe in chaos. No, that's a Discordian. Discordians believe in chaos. The CIA believes in chaos. Listen, your government that goes around the world blowing the fuck out of people, they believe in sure shit a lot of chaos. Anarchists, true anarchists, believe in human liberty, human dignity, and primarily living peacefully with your neighbors. That's what they actually believe. True anarchists want to live in peace. Tolstoy, you know, you ever hear of the guy who wrote War and Peace? Tolstoy was an anarchist, okay? Tolstoy didn't go around setting shit on fire. Tolstoy wanted to be left alone to write his fucking books. Well, oh, how terrible, right? You know? So yeah, that term, anarchism, has become so confabulated and misunderstood that it isn't at all surprising that a lot of anarchists will call themselves voluntarists or use another terminology. Or some of them will even say, I'm a libertarian, because it's almost the same. Not really, but it's kind of almost the same, right? But a lot of anarchists will not call themselves anarchists because that term has been so screwed up in the American popular consciousness that, yeah, immediately you get dirty looks. It's like, what are you, Antifa? And it's like, holy shit, dude. If an anarchist were a planet somewhere in the universe and you were on planet Antifa and you wanted to go from planet Antifa to planet anarchism, it would take a billion years at the speed of light. That's how far apart those fucking concepts are. How far apart those groups are. So that's enough to talk about on that. The next thing is also kind of related to me, but it comes up because I was having a really good conversation with a friend of mine I hadn't spoken to in a long time, not in a couple months. He's been going through a lot. He lost a family member, and it's hard. He lost a parent. That's a really hard thing to go through. So we were talking about the last couple months. He's a really bright guy, so our conversations can often go all over the place. And one of the things we recognized, or we talked about a little bit towards the end, is that in America today, if you're poor, if you don't have a lot of money, it has become a kind of stigma. You know, I don't think being poor is awesome. I don't think it's something where you say, I wish everybody was poor. Actually, I wish everybody could be free and productive and follow their dreams. That's what I actually believe. But in the open air prison of America, that doesn't always work out these days. But being poor in America is not a sin. Being poor in America is not a crime. The fact that you don't have as much money living in Little Saigon as some jackass in Magnolia or Maple Leaf, fuck that. Fuck that bullshit. If you don't have a lot of money, sure, it's good to have more money, but don't beat yourself up because you're poor. You know, do the best you can. Keep trying. Don't give up, although it can be really easy to give up, but don't. And don't beat yourself up. Do not flagellate yourself. Do not whip yourself. Do not put on a hair shirt because you're poor. Currently, I don't have a lot of money. In fact, technically, I have only a few dollars. I'm lucky enough to have a sister that cares for me, and she has helped me out with some food. I am lucky enough that I paid ahead on my rent, which come February, that's a whole nother story. But I don't have a lot of money, and I'm not ashamed of it. I'm not proud of it. I'm not ashamed of it. I have freckles, okay? And whatever you want to say about having freckles as a ginger, me personally, I am neither proud nor ashamed. It is a state of nature. I was born a ginger. I was born an Irishman, and I have red hair, you know, although it's getting gray as I get older. I am not ashamed of the fact that these are features of my existence, and they are simply things I did not control, and I don't care. My being poor right now is a function of my decisions and reality. Both, not one, but both, a lot like sailing. Whether you get from point A to point B is a function of your skills as a sailor and the fucking wind and the weather. You control your skills as a sailor. You do not control the wind and the weather. You can make good choices. You can plot your course. You can check the weather when you get up. But at the end of the day, it is a negotiation between your ability to make choices and reality. And I think that applies to life as a whole. I totally think people need to work hard, and nobody should like play the envy game. But don't pretend for a second that everybody starts out in the same spot or that everyone's situation remains the same. We all have challenges, rich and poor. In a free society, I think we could deal with it a lot better. And frankly, in a free society, I think wealth would be a lot flatter. You know, that's a whole nother topic. I don't think we would have huge wealth disparities in a free society. It doesn't mean everybody would be equally rich. I just think that for the most part, there would be a lot less poverty. Being poor is not a crime. Being poor is not a sin. Being poor is not something that people should mock or make fun of. And yet, in America today, and in many developed economies, being poor is shunned. Being poor is to be a lower caste. Being poor is to be a throwaway. My God, you should sit and listen to some of the liberal fucks in Seattle talk about homeless people. You know, I often tell people that, well, let me put it this way. When I was getting ready to go to Korea for my tour in Korea when I was in the Army, one of the sergeants I was working with at OBC, which was Officer Basic Course, said, you know, they also call that the land of the not quite right. And I got to be honest with you, after being in Korea for a year, I think that was mostly just an American kind of prejudicial thing. I don't think it had to do with anything, any kind of reality. I think it's just, you know, the nastiness of foreigners not understanding the culture. But yeah, they would say Korea was the land of the not quite right. I can tell you definitively, and I grew up in Washington State, so I feel like I have a right to say this. Seattle is the land of the not quite right. You would think, with all of these liberal douches who, you know, elect council people like that idiot socialist and stuff like that, you would think that they would be consistently moral for nothing else but in the Marxist sense, like they would give a shit about the poor. But that's not actually true. If you dig into these people, if you sit down to dinner with these people, if you actually get them talking about their home value, and that's the key, if you get them talking about their home and their home projects and their home appraisal and their flipping of homes, if you get them talking about the fact that they've turned shelter, which is a need, into a pyramid scheme, then all of a sudden you bring up the issue of homelessness, you will hear some of those most vile shit, almost like it was some crappy late 19th century robber baron who believed in, you know, social Darwinism, talking about the poor. Corner a Seattle person who owns a home in a nice neighborhood and start talking to them about homeless people, and I promise you, you're going to hear some shit that will make you wonder who the fuck these demonic people are. So yeah, even amongst the quote-unquote woolly-headed, you know, liberal Democrat types, being poor is considered, you know, forbidden. And oh my God, during the Obama years, if you weren't making a lot of money because of how miraculous that particular asshole was, you would really piss off a Democrat. You remember that Ferrell song from 2014, the happy song, happy, happy, happy? Yeah, that's the kind of propaganda bullshit that bounces around the brain case of most of the liberal scumbags in Seattle. Not that I think the Republicans are much better, but at least they're honest and consistent. At least you know you're talking to an asshole. The Democrats, man, holy fuck, do they do a mind game when it comes to issues of poverty? Not only do their policies create more poverty, you know, a minimum wage creates more poverty, taxes creates more poverty, having too much government and misinvestment creates a shitload of fucking poverty. But not only do they create more poverty through their stupid policies, but then they complain about the fact that their house schemes, their home schemes, their shelter pyramids are producing homeless people. And I've talked about this thought experiment before, and I would suggest you think about it before we go too far down the road here. But it's worth thinking about before I close this out. There are things you want, and there are things you need. I want to have a sexy girlfriend. I really do. I'd like to have a beautiful, sexy, you know, properly proportioned, beautiful. I said that twice. I would love to have a beautiful, sexy girlfriend. I don't want a doll or a robot. I don't care how smart they were. I don't even care if they were as advanced as the ones on Westworld. Fuck that. I would love to have a real human being girlfriend. But I don't actually need one, okay? I need food, I need water, I need shelter. In terms of Maslow's hierarchy, those are three things you basically need, okay? Go backwards in time, study your fucking anthropology and your history. You need water, you need food, you need shelter, okay? You need the ability to generate heat internally through food or externally through burning wood, and you need a way to retain your heat, which is called shelter. And if you live in a part of the world that experiences something called winter, you really do need fucking shelter. Now, while the winters in Seattle are not the worst, I wouldn't call them comfortable. I wouldn't say sleeping in a rainy street where the temperature is 45 degrees is comfortable. And arguably, you can actually die of hypothermia in a situation like that. And yet, even though shelter is part of the foundation of Maslow's hierarchy, even though shelter is an actual need, our economy has turned shelter into a pyramid scheme. Imagine if we did the food and water, what we've done to the whole housing market in the last 30 years. Yeah, there'd be a lot of dead people, which again, given the demonic nature of a lot of people these days, I am not sure that would bother them. You know, I've had friends in the past tell me that their favorite movie was Caligula. I have to say, when you're around these people and you start talking to these people, you realize that there's something missing. There's some type of basic empathy just missing. It's broken. You don't need a girlfriend. It's nice to have a girlfriend. You don't need a Tesla. Yeah, it'd be awesome. If I had a Tesla, I'd probably sell it because I need the money. But you don't need a Tesla. You don't need marijuana. I love weed, and I think weed helps me. But I don't need it. There's a lot of things I don't need. There are a lot of things I want. But you need food. You need water. And you need shelter. You don't even need health care. Health care is a great thing to have, assuming it works. Assuming you can afford it. It's wonderful. Assuming it's not shit and toxic, it's great. But you don't need it. Maybe you won't live as long. Maybe you'll have problems, but you don't need it. You don't need dental care. Yeah, your teeth will probably not be as healthy as other people, assuming you have a good dentist. But you don't absolutely need dental care. But I will say this once again, because this is really fucking important. You need food. You need water. And you need shelter. And if you turn any of those things into a pyramid scheme, you're a fucking asshole. Okay? I'm not going to pass a law to prevent you from being an asshole. If I lived in a free world, I know for a fact that it kind of takes care of itself. If you're going to piss in the community pond, if you're going to be an asshole, if you're going to fart in the tiny room, there will be repercussions. In a free society, believe me. If you behave like a son of a bitch, there will be repercussions. If anything, you will be shunned, okay? Yet in Seattle today, we laud, we applaud, we support, we endorse a culture of turning shelter into an investment scheme. And whatever else you want to say about that, if you want to say that's smart, fine. You know, you can make money as a hitman too. They make money. They make lots of money. So if your issue is making money, there is lots of ways to make a lot of money doing terrible shit. Believe me, that's most of America's economy now. But yeah, you might make a lot of money flipping houses. You might. But you are participating in something that's turning a cornerstone need into an unreachable goal. And I don't know. I would say, how do you sleep with yourself at night? But since I've met a lot of these fuckers, I've actually had dinner with these fuckers, I know how they sleep at night. They're soulless. You know, I remember having dinner, and I've told this story before, but this is 2013. This is about 5 months before I left Seattle the first time. Well, not the first time, but the last time, really. I left Seattle. I thought I'd never come back. And the reason why I came back, separate topic, was because a year ago, it was between drowning myself in the White River or moving in with one of my sisters in Seattle. And believe me, that decision was a fucking close call. Do I move to Seattle or do I drown myself? And that was a fucking tough decision. But I was having dinner with this Buddhist, a liberal Democrat Buddhist, also real estate agent. She owns a real estate business. Owns lots of homes and has been very successful, okay, making money off of the pyramid scheme around shelter. And I said to her, you know, did you realize, because she's a liberal, so I use liberal evidence against her, did you realize that the World Food Program, which again is the United Nations, not a conservative organization, not an anarchist organization, the United fucking Nations had a study after the first wave of quantitative easing that more or less showed that our printing money after the great financial crisis was pricing much of the world out of eating. I want to repeat that statement. When we were printing all that money so that the big banks could you know, recover and all the real estate agents could start selling homes again, we were making it way more difficult for the average person in, let's say, North Africa, which, oh boy, the Arab Spring, I wonder where that came from. We were making it difficult for them to eat. And I remember explaining this to the Buddhist, and I remember showing her the link, and she looked at it, and she couldn't dispute the information. So here was her response from the Buddhist, from the liberal, from the warm-hearted motherfucker who lives in Seattle. She said to me, "I don't know those people." You want to know how the fuckers who have turned shelter into a pyramid scheme sleep at night? They don't give a fuck. They don't care. They love it. If Seattle Department of Transportation puts up little metal spikes under bridges so people can't sleep outside of the rain, so people can't seek some minimal shelter so they don't basically freeze to death, they love it. Oh yeah, put up the metal spikes, the concrete spikes, install bike racks in the most ridiculous and arcane places possible, because the fucking homeless can just go and die. And yes, I know, I would agree. There are some homeless who are crazy. There are some homeless who are drug addicts. There are some homeless who are simply so lazy they don't want to work. But I would wager that's not nearly 50%. I would wager at least half of those people, because I've seen them with my own fucking eyes. They just want food. They just want shelter. They just want water. And they have fallen off the social radar. And here's another little interesting factoid, because I got my phone turned back on today, and it reinforced a notion I've been aware of for several years now, and you might be aware of yourself. If you don't have a phone, and realistically, in the software world, if you don't have a smartphone at this point, you're not going to get a job. I'll repeat that statement. Without a phone, and I don't care, I can use Skype for voice-to-voice. There are lots of alternatives that I can use, and it's just as effective. That's not the fucking point. If you don't buy into that part of the system and have a phone, you're not going to have a job. You're not going to have a place to sleep. You're not going to have food or water. Homeless people, most of them, they don't even feel about the technology the way I do. They simply can't afford a phone. They are off the social radar. They have disappeared. Okay? They are no longer considered real. When the Bureau of Labor and Statistics or the Federal Reserve says that, you know, someone is no longer counted as unemployed, what they mean is that person no longer matters. And just as a side note, that's why the unemployment numbers keep going down. It has got nothing to do with the economy. It has everything to do with the fact that a whole bunch of people have simply been pushed off the edge of American society. Goodbye. We don't give a fuck. Fuck you. There are lots of things I used to love about Washington State, and there are lots of things I used to love about Seattle. But the one thing I don't like about Seattle, and I don't think it has anything to do with Seattle, I think it has a lot to do with the people that have come here in the last 20 or 30 years, 40 years. It has more to do with that. But the culture of Seattle has become gross. It has become toxic. If whatever liberalism and being a Democrat is, I must say with a definitive perspective, that it has become a monstrously destructive philosophy. And yeah, you might think I'm being too extreme. I don't care. You might think I'm being unfair. Keep in mind, I'm not a Republican either. I don't really like that party in any way, shape, or form. They are total hypocrites, as bad as Democrats in that sense. But I will say this. For the most part, you can corner a Republican with hypocrisy, and often they'll recognize it, and more often than not, they're willing to at least have that discussion. You corner a Democrat or a liberal or a progressive with anything remotely looking like logic or reason or mathematics, and they go ballistic and they walk away like a child. So there you go. This is my second podcast for Thursday, January the 10th, 2019. If you're a home flipper in Seattle, I want to flip you the bird. I mean, seriously, I'm not saying you're evil, but you really need to think about how you make money, because shelter, And maybe here in Little Saigon, I'm hyper aware seeing all the homeless people, but shelter is not something you should be, I don't know, leveraging up on in some type of investment scheme. And if you think so, then why don't you do it with food? Why don't you figure out a scheme to control food so you can make lots of money and people can get hungry and die? Because that's what's happening, okay? People are dying because they don't have a warm place to sleep at night. And you're making money because people are dying because they don't have a warm place to sleep at night. Let that fucking sink in the next time you go to some real estate show and talk about how rich you're going to become. Good night.